Among the problems laid out in the torture report is the practice of using subcontractors as interrogators, privatized paramilitary and intelligence officials, often with former military credentials, terminated from official work sometimes with the government, who found their way back into the war on terror with disastrous consequences. A similar pattern of privatization of official law enforcement takes place in the civilian world. Security guards, who you see every day, there are at least a million of them in the U.S., twice the number of police officers. How do they get these jobs? What training do they have to carry out what their uniform and gun suggest they're doing? According to an investigation by the Center for Investigative Reporting, the answer in many cases is, we have no idea. Shoshana Walter, public safety reporter at the center, says the security guard industry is a parallel universe where the expected norms of policing simply don't apply.
The security industry actually is very different in some ways from the law enforcement profession. I mean, they have limited powers. They don't have the same ability to detain and arrest and search and seizure. But they're oftentimes taking the same types of roles as law enforcement officers, and they have a tiny fraction of the amount of training. In the state of California, a police officer is required to get a minimum of 600 hours of training. In the state of California, an armed guard gets 54 hours of training. So the difference there is huge.
What about the background checks and the arrest records and those sorts of things for security guards or armed guards? What is the oversight there?
We did a survey of the entire country, and each state is completely different. And what we found is that 27 states actually are not checking armed guard applicants through the prohibited possessor database. And that's a database of people who are prohibited by federal law from possessing guns. So you have guards out there who may have been committed for mental health issues, who may have restraining orders against them, may have been dishonorably discharged from the military, misdemeanor domestic violence convictions. They can become armed guards with guns in many states.
Even though they have done things that explicitly forbid them from owning guns.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these are people who are prohibited by law from carrying guns. They can't buy guns, they can't possess guns, and they're getting jobs as armed guards.
Now, to have a security guard, and you look at the insignia on the uniform, and some uniforms are more official looking than others, you know, the idea is the presence of such a person actually makes the place, the facility, the, retail establishment more secure. Is there any evidence for that?
There have been studies. There have been studies that show that the presence of a security guard, not necessarily armed, it can lead to a decrease in crime. But we actually did an analysis of the FBI bank robbery database. It's this comprehensive database of every single bank robbery in the United States. And we were able to basically measure what happens when an armed guard is introduced into a bank during a bank robbery type situation. And what we found is that when an armed guard was present during a bank robbery, the chance of violence happening tripled.
You've given us a terrific sort of statistical picture here and sort of a sense of just how distorted the role of a security guard is compared to what our perception is. What are the individual cases, individual stories that stand out in your mind about what can go wrong in individual, districts and places around the country?
There are a lot of stories out there. I mean, one of the problems with the way the armed guard industry is regulated is that for the most part, there's no one monitoring when a security guard shoots his or her gun. So you have situations across the country where a guard has acted recklessly or has exhibited poor training. You have those cases where guards can shoot people and keep their armed guard licenses. And there's a case that really stands out in my mind in Miami, Florida, a couple years ago, where an armed guard who was later diagnosed with a severe mental health problems, psychotic disorders, delusional disorders, he was working as an armed guard at a strip club, and he spotted these two men sitting in a car. He said they looked menacing and were rolling a joint. And as he was walking towards them, he said that they both got out of the car simultaneously, and he interpreted that as a threat and shot both of them. One of them is now paralyzed from the waist down, and the other was killed.
What about people who actually once were police officers and were fired, who use the security guard industry as a kind of a fallback plan B job?
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty common. The security guard profession is a great backup for law enforcement officers who were fired for misconduct issues, excessive force issues, civil rights abuses. And there's only one state that actually checks for that, the state of Oregon. But the state actually has never rejected an armed guard applicant who previously was a law enforcement officer. So overall, in the United States, someone who was fired as a law enforcement officer can't get back into the profession. The armed guard profession is an easy backup.
And how did this get out of hand in Fulton County, Georgia?
There was a sheriff's deputy. He spent 2 years with the Fulton County Sheriff's Department. During those 2 years, he had a series of complaints and investigations into him, including over allegations that he had choked several inmates, beaten an inmate. He resigned in lieu of termination, and he became an armed guard in an apartment complex in Austell, which is a suburb of Atlanta. And while there, he picked right back up. He was hypervigilant. He carried a gun. Sometimes he wore a uniform. Sometimes he didn't. A lot of residents complained about his hypervigilance and about racism. And within that year, there was an incident where he confronted a guy for what he thought was driving under the influence, picked a fight. The guy picked up a stick, and this former sheriff's deputy shot him.
Is the fix here more regulations for screening applicants, or is it simply not permitting security guards, except in very special circumstances, to carry guns at all?
I'm not sure what the fix would be. I think definitely people who work in the security industry, including even some security executives, want to see more uniform standards across the states. And there are some states that do some things really well. Florida, for example, they don't require mental health examinations for armed guard applicants, but they do require that guards or their employers file reports whenever they use their guns. And the state does a really good job of investigating security guard shootings and immediately taking action if they see behavior that's dangerous or reckless. But in the majority of the country, no one's tracking security guard shootings, no one's monitoring them, no one's investigating them. There are only 12 states that require those reports to be filed. And even among those 12 states, there's massive underreporting. Regulators receive the reports and rarely do anything with them. So there's a huge lack of oversight into security guards and what they do with their guns.
Speaking to us from the Bay Area, Shoshana Walter is public safety reporter at the Center for Investigative Reporting. Her investigation, Hired Guns, was produced in association with CNN. Shoshana, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.